Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Principle of Hospitality, the podcast. Now, we've had a collision of worlds, a joining of forces, a banding of brothers. Sash from Principle Design and me, Sean from Open Pantry Consulting, are pleased to announce this venture for 2021, Principle of Hospitality. Now, we know that food brings people together and promotes community. And at Principle of Hospitality, we are here to disrupt current perceptions of what the hospitality industry can achieve in today's ever-evolving and challenging environment. Now, that's why we've partnered with Chef's Hat on this Principle of Hospitality podcast. Now, if you didn't know, Chef's Hat is the largest family-owned and operated hospitality supplier in Australia. They strive to inspire cooks, chefs, bakers, and bartenders to deliver the best product with the best tools every day. So that's why we're so proud to partner with Chef's Hat, where the industry shops. Now let's get into today's podcast. I think you're really gonna enjoy it. Welcome to another Principle of Hospitality podcast. Thanks so much for listening in. Currently in home in Queensland due to the pandemic, our next guest, Chef Lisa Mead, has spent the last 26 years traveling between Australia, the Mediterranean, and the Caribbean, cooking aboard luxury yachts. Yes, you actually heard me correctly. Whilst on board, Lisa has served up some of her amazing and internationally inspired dishes to royalty, heads of state, and celebrities, which I can't wait to get into in this episode today. Lisa also appears on her very own TV cooking show in the Caribbean, aptly titled Galley Gourmet with Chef Lisa, which has a very successful 8 seasons exploring the British Virgin Islands. Let's get into this podcast because I can't wait to hear more stories from Lisa. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
Hello, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Now, as we were speaking about before the podcast, it's just so exciting to talk to so many different people in this industry on this podcast. And today is honestly very, very unique because I have never spoken to a chef who works on yachts anywhere, let alone the Caribbean and the Mediterranean, right? So let's talk about that, because obviously you've been in the industry for a long time. You come with a lot of experience, a lot of stories, a lot of knowledge. Let's get into how you actually started out and how it got to a point where you were working on yachts in the Caribbean.
So I was dating an Aussie chef here in Brisbane.
Right.
And he had got word that there was a gig going back in the British Virgin Islands where he had worked previously before I'd met him.
Mm.
He was chefing on yachts for a couple of years over there. And it was too good a gig to turn down. So he said to me, "Hey, Lisa, why don't you just give up everything and follow me over to the other side of the world?" So I was like, "Okay, that sounds all right." I had no clue where I was going. I didn't know anything about the British Virgin Islands.
Wow.
So it was a big adventure.
Yeah, right. How old were you at that stage when you decided to do that?
27.
Wow, how exciting. How exciting.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was pretty amazing. And then obviously getting over there, the plan was just to stick around for a short while, but we stayed on for another 5 years together as a couple. And in that time, I started to get into the yachting industry.
Yes.
And then fell in love with the area and decided to stay. How did I get into it? I was hanging out at the local bar where we were staying. There was this bar down at the end of the beach.
Of course.
The guy walked in and said, "I'm looking for a chef, a replacement chef, because ours just broke her leg.
Right.
Is anyone here able to do the gig?" So I stuck my hand up and I said, "Yep, I'll do it."
How many people were in this bar at the time? Was it a packed bar, or were you just right at the right person, right time?
It was kind of like a local hangout.
Oh, okay.
It was probably midweek, so it was pretty quiet.
How awesome.
Some oldie, salty sailors, old guys there that weren't really luxury yacht material. but yeah, I had no clue about sailing. I think I'd been on a boat maybe 2 or 3 times in my life as just, you know, a guest on a day sail boat. So I had no clue about sailing, which is very important part of the job. Mm-hmm. So I really had to sort of learn on my feet. It was pretty insane.
So how did it come about that you sort of stayed for a long period of time? I mean, obviously, you know, that was a bit of a time ago. Like what drove you to really enjoy being on yachts and cooking on yachts?
I think it stems from early childhood. I moved around a lot as a kid. My father was in the Australian Air Force. So mm-hmm. I was actually born in Southeast Asia in Malaysia.
Wow.
So I think I was so used to the travel side of things that I loved that part of the job.
Yeah.
And it's not just the same 8 days sailing around the same area. We'd go all over the Caribbean. So it was always a new adventure. And I really just loved meeting people. A real people person. Mm-hmm. And I just fell in love with the islands and the lifestyle. It was just really addictive. I mean, I can't believe it's been, you know, almost 27 years.
Yeah, well. Explain to a layman like myself, like what is the lifestyle like in the islands? Because, you know, I've lived where you live right now in Brisbane for 5 or 6 years. And Brisbane to me, Queensland just is, you know, I'd like to say it's so laid back, it's horizontal, right? And so how does that compare to like the British Islands and what I'd imagine would be even more of a laid back kind of culture?
It is. It's more laid back if it can be. Obviously it's you know, it's the Caribbean and that whole lifestyle is about being chilled out and relaxed. Mm. There isn't a lot to do other than water sports, water activities.
Right.
So if you can't, you know, sort of find avenues in that area, it's probably a tricky job to be in.
Mm-hmm.
But in saying that, where I was based, which is Tortola in the British Virgin Islands, it would take 3 hours for me to jump on a plane and get to New York City. So you've got the best of both worlds. You can be floating around in the water, enjoying the islands, and then jumping on a plane and in 3 hours you're walking down the street in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's such a difference, right? What in those sort of early years especially, like what were some of the hardest things about working in a kitchen on a yacht? Like I'm trying to imagine how big, like I'm curious how big these yachts are that you've been working on and what were some of the challenges?
Yeah, all various sizes. I mean, I started off on the smaller size boat. So probably the smallest boat I ever worked on would have been about, you know, 55 feet.
Right.
The biggest I think I've worked on is about 170 feet.
Wow.
So obviously the galley is bigger, the bigger the boat is. Space is tricky. That probably wasn't too much of a problem. Just learning how to keep things alive, you know, fresh-wise for the week, how things stored the best,
mm-hmm.
How to deal with running out of ingredients and not having any island close by that had a shop on it if you ran out of eggs or whatever it might be, and how on earth are you going to do the meal you thought you were planning to do?
Yes.
Now you've got to change the whole menu.
Yes.
And then obviously weather plays into it. You know, not every day is smooth sailing, no pun intended. You know what I mean? It can have some pretty rough conditions sometimes when you're further out in the ocean going between islands. So
yes.
Learning to understand when the best time to prep is and, you know, basically how to adapt your menu, you know, on the spur of the moment.
Yeah. I listened to a podcast the other day with Maggie Beer, and I think one of her first experiences in hospitality was on a yacht, as being a cook on a yacht. Funnily enough, right? And I remember that she said in the podcast that I think they were supposed to have a larder that was full of food for like 2 months or something, or maybe 3 months. And she got rid of it in half that time, right? And she lost her job because she used all the food, right, and didn't realize the expectation. Like is that probably the biggest challenge when you're actually cooking on a yacht as a comparison to, you know, doing it in a normal kitchen on land?
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, you've really got to understand. I mean, you're going out for generally 8 days, 7 nights.
Right.
In the British Virgin Islands, you're pretty lucky in that there's somewhere that you can go generally to get what you need, or you can order a provisioner to come over on a fast boat and deliver what you're missing. But if you're going further down island, say you've got a trip that's from the British Virgin Islands to St. Martin, that's like a 14-hour sail, or there's longer trips.
Yes.
You really have to understand every ingredient and how, you know, maybe double up on certain things. It's really intense study of what your menu will be.
Mm-hmm.
And also sometimes the guests get on and, you know, you've spoken to them in advance, you've got all their information, you think you've got it right, and then all of a sudden, yeah, they remember that they didn't like whatever it was that you planned to do. So now you have to go, oh, crap, okay. I'll fix that. Yeah, so it's tricky.
How does it work? Obviously, you've been doing it for such a long time, Lisa, and like, does it sort of like what I was thinking before the podcast was like being there that amount of time? Is it kind of like being in the hospitality industry, but just on water? In the fact that if you didn't like working for a particular boat, you just go and find other employment on another yacht. A bit like someone would leave a restaurant and then go to another restaurant or a cafe or something like that. Is it very much the same thing?
It is. It is. Okay. People do move around from boat to boat quite often because it is really intense living. I mean, you're living with multiple crew and guests.
Right.
And if there's personality issues, it's not going to work because you literally wake up with those people and you go to sleep with those people.
Yes.
And you're in each other's faces in confined space.
Yeah.
So a little tiny argument could turn into something really big if you're not able to control the situation. And you're on show 24/7. The guests are watching you all the time. So any problems that you might have behind the scenes, where there really isn't a behind the scenes because it's all out in the open, you really got to, you know, have a poker face. To answer your question, people do move around a fair bit in the industry.
Can you give us one or two really good stories? Because obviously at the start we talked about how you were doing, you know, dishes for royalty and heads of state and celebrities and stuff like that. Like, is there anything, I'm sure there's a lot you can't share, but like, is there stuff you can share that would be a really cool story?
I can tell you a story without telling you names.
Okay, that sounds good.
So I did the Mediterranean season as well as the Caribbean. And on this particular boat, it was a 135-foot sailing yacht, beautiful luxury sailing yacht. So we had a famous movie actor and his on-off girlfriend and models, and it was a pretty rah-rah thing for the week.
Wait. He had his on-off girlfriend plus other models that were on the
– okay. No, they weren't all hooking up.
Oh, right, okay.
They were friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But the on-off girlfriend was being a bit annoying, so he decided that he needed to get away from her and just get some time out.
Right.
So there were three levels to this yacht, and I was on the bottom level where the galley was.
Right.
And I had a long counter in front of me and stools. And he came down and he had a bottle of vintage French champagne, two glasses, and he just plonked himself down on the stool and started telling me these really foul, dirty jokes and just mucking around, having fun, pouring me champagne. And, I mean, this is a guy that I've had a major crush on watching his films, and now he's sitting across from me and in my brain I'm thinking, I'm on a date with this guy.
There's champagne. Yeah. There's a table. Yeah.
Yeah. It was amazing. It really was.
Yeah, I mean, right.
And then she found him and said, you know, come on upstairs. So he was like, I got to go. Bye. But, yeah. There's many situations like that are quite surreal because, you know, you do see, especially if you really admire the person, it's pretty wild to actually be chatting to them and hanging out with them. That was pretty crazy. I had Pete Townsend from The Who on one of my boats, and that was amazing. Jerry Hall, Mick Jagger's ex-wife girlfriend, was on that charter as well. So she'd come to the table every night dressed in couture evening wear, and everyone else was in shorts and T-shirts. and the funny thing on that trip was that I think it was the first time that she'd been away from her kids. So Mick was back taking kind of overseeing the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So he would periodically ring the boat, and we worked out pretty quickly that if a call was coming in, it was probably him.
Right.
So the six crew would race to grab the phone and be like, you know, hello, Lone Star.
Hi, this is Mick Jagger.
But Pete Townsend, he'd do sing-alongs some nights, so we'd all be singing along, and it was just another out-of-body experience, you know, like, oh, this is kind of cool.
Wow. We often surprised how down-to-earth, hopefully down to earth, a lot of these people who had high profiles were. Right.
Yeah. And I would say bar one person who I can't name.
Yes.
She's a famous singer, that's all I'll say.
Okay.
But everybody else was absolutely lovely, and they just wanted to relax and have a nice time and not worry about anything. Mm. And, yeah, they were fine. They were good.
It is good to hear. Yeah. I think if we had a glass of champagne together, I think you'd tell me a lot more stories, which would be even better.
Yeah.
So I really want to get into your projects you've been working on. But before I get into that, I want to talk about, like, how did COVID affect you? Like, you were obviously, were you working in the British Islands or the Mediterranean, like, during that time? And, like, what was the scenario that happened?
Oh, my God, it was insane. So I was actually on charter. This was like late March of last year. Mm-hmm. And I got a message from a friend in Sydney, and he was saying, are you coming back to Australia? And I was like, no, why? This was kind of early stages early on. Of it. Mm-hmm. We were aware of it, but we didn't think anything much of it.
Right.
Especially where we were, because it was business as usual. Charters were happening. Right. Everything was open. Mm-hmm. And then he said, just check with the Australian consulate in your area. So I did. I got on the phone and I rang the head of the consulate in Barbados, and he was like, yeah, I think you need to go home.
Wow.
So I thought, I'll just call the one in Washington. And they said the same thing. They said, right. Look, if my plan every year was normally to come back in August, spend 3 months in Australia, which is what I do generally every year. Mm-hmm. But they said, and they had great forward thinking. They were like, look, we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if you'll get out of where you are and whether you'll get into Australia. So if you can, go now. So I got off the phone and I rang the owners of the yacht that were in the States and said, I'm really sorry, but I'm leaving to go to Australia as soon as possible. And they were fine. They said, do what you need to do, told the crew, and managed to rebook my flights. And then that was due to fly out on Tuesday. I got a text on my phone on the Sunday saying that all the borders to the British Virgin Island were closed, both airport and sea.
Whoa.
No way out. You're stuck. You can't go.
Whoa.
I was freaking out. And sure. Then literally maybe 2 hours later, I got another text to say they've opened it just until Monday. So then I had to rejig my flights.
Oh.
Got to Puerto Rico. Everywhere I went, from Puerto Rico, North Carolina, Dallas, LA, my flights were being cancelled all the way along because there were just nobody was flying. So they were cancelling flights.
Wow.
And I was like, I don't think I'm even going to get out of the States.
Yeah.
But I managed to get out of LA and back into Brisbane. And I quarantined in a hotel, even though this was before you even had to quarantine anywhere except self-isolate. Mm. But I was coming to stay with mom, and I thought, look, I've been through the States. Who knows what I might have picked up? So it's just right. safe to do it. And
yeah.
That's how I got here.
Wowee.
Pretty crazy adventure.
Yeah, what a ride. Yeah. That's pretty insane. Luckily, like during the podcast, the last 12 months, we've heard some really weird stories about people getting back home, and they have been overseas. Two or three of our guests have been overseas and then, you know, getting back home. And I remember one of our guests like paying a couple of German tourists flights back to Germany to get in the front of the line in a wow. South American airport in order to get home. And wow. otherwise he wouldn't have got home to Sydney. And it was just an incredible story. I can't even imagine, you know, that period of time for me being overseas. So I'm glad you're home.
Yes.
So, you know, you've got home, you're in Brisbane. What are you then thinking you're going to do? Like, yachts are your life. You've obviously yeah. got a lot of projects on the side that you've been working on, which I really want to discuss. But what did you sort of do when you first, you know, got your feet on land in Brisbane?
Yeah, well, in those 2 weeks that I was sitting in the hotel room, I started thinking, okay, think, Lisa. What I've always been good at doing is thinking on my feet quite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that the cookbook was already planning to come out, so I had focus for that.
Yes.
And then I thought, I had done cooking workshops on the boats that I've cooked on, where I would have the guests do cooking workshops. So I thought, well, maybe I can just do that. I can start with that. So I started working on the process of setting up cooking workshops in a commercial kitchen in Brisbane.
Right.
And then I also thought, well, I've got a huge client base of Americans overseas. Maybe I could look at doing live Zoom cooking classes. So
right.
I started doing that, and that's sort of been my bread and butter, so to speak, while I've been getting the commercial kitchen up and running. And then I thought, I'm really missing being on the water. How can I get that back into my life? Mm. And I connected with a yacht that I'd worked on years ago in Sydney. They had new owners, but they were keen to partner with me on this idea of these indulgence charters.
Wow.
Which is basically what I was doing overseas. Guests come on board for the day and they get cooking workshops from me. They can have spa treatments. They can have live jazz or classical music. So there's a list of things they can mm-hmm. decide what they want in advance.
Oh, cool.
So I hooked up with the boat in Sydney and also at Southport here in at the coast, mm-hmm. 86-foot motor yachts. So I've wow. sort of got my foot back in the water in that respect as well.
Yeah. Has it been it's obviously been a really challenging time, as it has for everyone, but has it bred – have those, you know, new challenges about doing, you know, Zoom activities and doing different kind of charter boats and that kind of stuff. Like, has it bred some excitement back into you again? Obviously, I can't imagine you ever been bored in the Caribbean or Mediterranean on a yacht. But no. Like, but has it given you a new challenge and a new lease on life in a way?
It has 100%. You know, I'm incredibly lucky that I am here in Australia because for a long time things had shut down overseas. The islands were, you know, closed to tourism. So I would have literally been without a job.
Yes.
And, yeah, coming back to Australia was the smartest thing that I ever did. And I'm loving all these new opportunities. Mm-hmm. Just as a side gig, as most chefs do, I create artwork as well. For years I've painted and exhibited and sold my art.
Yes, I've heard about this. Let's talk about this because this is very, very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had all these paintings that I'd taken photographs of over the years.
Okay.
And I worked out that I could find a company in the States that I could superimpose the digital image of my artwork onto their products.
Right.
And then sell them internationally. So I have a steady flow of work coming through from doing that. All I have to do is, you know, post some stuff up on social media and then I get orders for whatever it might be, tote bags or yoga pants or swimsuits. And
wow.
It's just, you know, my artwork on their products. And then on top of that, I've been lucky enough to keep getting commissions both here in Australia of my paintings and also overseas. So it's great. It's given me a nice balance of art and food.
Yeah, which I think is something I've been thinking a lot about the last year is this, a bit like how you talked about in the charter yachts in Sydney and in Southport. This intersection again between like high luxury service based stuff like beauty products and all those kind of things, music. You're obviously talking about art, which in a sense food is, right? And like any good chef, like it is a form of artistic expression. It's just on a plate. That's really, really wow. I've never met an artist before on the show, so that's a new first. Are they paintings? Are they what kind of things do you work in?
I actually use exterior house paint from Bunnings because it's less expensive than art supply shops.
That is awesome.
And the colours don't fade because it's exterior house paint.
Oh wow, that's very smart.
I started using that type of paint when I was working in the British Virgin Islands doing my artwork because. The art supply shops that because they'd had to bring the stuff in from the States or wherever, it was super expensive.
Super expensive, yeah, yeah.
I was like, well, how can I get paint, like really good colours and a big variety? And then I went to the local paint factory and they were like, we can give you samples of all these colours. And
yeah,
it was
right.
like, great. So, yeah, a lot less expensive and the colours are incredible. What do I paint? I paint lots of things. Right now I'm into lots of native Australian flowers, birds. Overseas I did lots of fish because I dive and I snorkel a lot, so I'm obsessed with coral and the fish.
Wow.
People, yeah, all that sort of stuff. I guess just tropical style of it's some of it's abstract and some of it's realist. It's a bit of both.
Do you think that comes from being in nature so much and just you obviously see a lot of things that people, you know, don't see? You're not like a chef who's cooking, you know, on Chapel Street in Melbourne. Like you're out all the time.
Yes.
It must be just a privilege to do that kind of stuff. I know there'd be a lot of challenges around it, but it must be a lot of privileges in that too.
It is, and you're right. The inspiration is definitely where I've worked. Mm. In fact, I would almost say 70% of my yacht chef friends overseas are all painters.
Wow. Sculptors.
Yeah, it's crazy. And they're really amazing. Watercolors, acrylics, oil. I mean, beautiful work.
Right.
I guess it just flows together. The guy that I went over with originally is a sculptor and a chef. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sort of. I don't know how that works. Do you do any type of artwork yourself?
Oh, thanks for asking. No, I don't. It's not very often that people ask me the question, Liz. No, I don't. My grandfather was fantastic, but he was never in hospitality, but he was a fantastic oil painter, like of scenery and that kind of stuff. So my heritage is from Holland, and so there's a lot of water and that kind of stuff that he would paint. And then when they came to Australia sort of in the 50s, that changed into a lot of like obviously Australian landscape stuff. But he was exceptional, very, very good. So
and have you ever tried to see if you've got your grandfather's genetics?
No, my sister is fantastic. She should have gone further with it, and I think she's very, very good in artistic flair. But no, I think my creativity comes from food more than art. I know where my where I'm strong, Lisa. Yes. let's talk about the book that's going to come out soon. When we release this in April, like it'll be very, very at the same time, I believe. Obviously, but I want to talk about the cooking shows as well, because obviously you've had a lot of episodes online with Galley Gourmet. Did a lot of that work, and I've watched a lot of it, and it's fantastic stuff. And it did a lot of that allow inspiration for the books, or what's happened? How did that sort of come about?
The book came more from my charter guests.
Interesting.
Because they were almost all charters, they would say, during or towards the end, can we buy your cookbook?
Right.
And I'd say, well, I don't have one. And they said, you should make one.
Yeah, right.
And I thought, gosh, if I'd started that 26 years ago, I would have been a lot better off. And it was a great – that they were the inspiration, really, to encourage me to do it. And then it was the perfect base of working out what recipes would be best in the cookbook.
Okay.
Because I chose the most popular ones over the years that people – you know, consistently really loved and talked about. So that was easy.
Mm-hmm.
And the type of food that I do, because I've traveled a lot and because my clients enjoy food from everywhere, it sort of covers all nationalities and obviously all types of dietary requirements, whether it's vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very lucky that I've had a base to deal with to get that concept in my mind. And also, I think with this book, I've had to adjust the recipes that I did on land to work on a boat.
Yes.
And simplify them because of the space and the time that constraints that I had.
Mm-hmm.
So that works really well with, you know, home chefs that have just come home from work and they don't have that much time to fuss around, but they still want to make something yummy and tasty.
Mm-hmm.
So these recipes are good for that.
That's awesome.
Fine dining made easy.
I like that. Fine dining made easy. We're going to use that in the promotion of the podcast. do you find, because I'm thinking about like your career versus someone who's working in a standalone venue, right, as a chef. Do you think you've got potentially a lot more skill or just different skills for the pure fact that, you know, you listed off things like, you know, veganism, gluten-free, you know, I imagine you do a lot of sugar-free, some weird diets of people who come on your ship. Where you have to not just change one dish, but change 8 days worth of dishes. So it's not like a chef working in a normal venue where they get annoyed because someone's gluten intolerant, or they get annoyed because someone doesn't want, you know, avocado in a sauce, you know, and that person goes away after an hour. Like this person is with you for 8 days. So, like, do you think that's made you a better chef and a better variety of things that you can produce because of that reason?
Probably. I think, you're a bit more stilted in a restaurant environment. You sort of have more of a set menu that you're working with, and yes, it changes periodically, but like you said, for me, every week is different, and maybe even during the week it's different. So you really have to broaden your understanding of different cuisines and different diets. I mean, Americans, I love to pieces,
yes,
but whatever the latest fad is, they're on it.
Yes.
And they know about it seems before anybody else does. And so you really have to be constantly learning, which is a good thing. I
mean, yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. I think most of worldwide trend comes out of, you know, California, Chicago and New York, right? So I think and London, obviously. So I think it's a very, very interesting how it's going to change, I think, moving, you know, past the pandemic, and how people are going to continue to eat. Like, are they going to eat differently? Like, or are they going to go back to, you know, sort of a changed approach like they were before pandemic and riding on the new wave, I suppose, as we just said. Couple of questions before I let you go, Lisa. I'd really like to know, like, when everything dies down and we get some tourism normality again, and I've had people from the tourism industry, you know, especially in Asia, who control a lot of, you know, the movement of travel in Asia and that kind of stuff, be on the podcast, and they've talked to me about how they don't think that 2019 numbers pre-pandemic are going to get to anywhere near until sort of mid-2022. So let's fast forward to 2022 potentially. Do you think you'll go back to yachts in the Caribbean and Mediterranean, or now that you've been back home in Brisbane for a little bit, like, do you think you're going to stay in Brisbane for a bit longer?
I think there is one other thing that I haven't mentioned that I've also done, and that is creating a introduction to chefing on yacht course, which was picked up by the university in the British Virgin Islands.
Wow.
So just another thing to add in there.
How are you doing all this stuff?
they've created some kind of hybrid system where it's called Moodle, and it's a teaching platform that you can do online.
Okay.
But part of my course needs to be done in person. So I'll need to go back at least just to teach the instructors how to do this course.
Right.
So maybe a few months back there, but the plan is to kind of kickstart things here in Australia and move forward in that direction, I think.
Wow. How exciting. The question I always leave every guest on at the moment is what are you looking forward to both professionally and personally in 2021 and beyond, Lisa?
Professionally, I'm really excited with all these projects that I have going on. Mm-hmm. I have this little dream of creating a pilot of Galley Gourmet with Chef Lisa based around the Whitsunday. So
nice.
Using a boat and doing something similar. So that's sort of a little dream that I have in the background as well.
That's great.
and then personally wise, I started learning the piano at the beginning of this COVID thing. So I'd like to get to a point where I can actually play some music without looking at a screen, and tap dancing. I've always wanted to learn to tap dance.
Oh God, I think I need to lie down after just listening to everything that you're involved with. You just made me feel incredibly lazy. So that's fantastic. I need to go paint something, I think, after this podcast. Lisa, today has been a joy is an understatement. It's been really good to understand your career and really learn some valuable insights into how people can move really in an excited way through their career and do different things. And I think that's what good hospitality careers are. They are colorful. They are not just gray, and you can pretty much just make your own opportunities. And I think that's what today's podcast has really shown. What's the best way that people can connect with you, Lisa? Because I know a lot of people are going to want to after this podcast goes out.
Yeah, thank you for that. Probably the best and easiest way is to go to lisameade.com, lisameade.com. That mm-hmm. covers everything. All the stuff we've talked about mm-hmm. is virtually on that website.
Fantastic. I'll make sure I link that up in the show notes.
Thank you.
Chef Lisa Meade, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thanks again for tuning in to another episode of Principle of Hospitality, the podcast. We hope you really enjoyed this episode. Please comment, like, and share this podcast with your friends in the industry. We're making this content with the industry in mind, so we'd really appreciate you sharing it along with those that you care about in the industry. Thanks as well to our sponsor, Chef's Hat, the largest family-owned and operated hospitality supplier in Australia. They strive to inspire cooks, chefs, bakers, and bartenders to deliver the best product with the best tools every day. We're so proud to partner with them. That's where the industry shops. And if you don't know us at Poe, Sash, my co-founder from Principal Design, has one of the best design agencies in Australia. So if you're looking for anything around strategy, branding, digital design, and graphic design, then you can find them at principaldesign.com.au. And myself at Open Pantry Consulting for anything to do with hospitality operations, strategy, and recruitment. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks to Chef's Hat for supporting us. And until next time, stay safe. Cheers. Thank you.